Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Welcome to our second hour here on Circles of Change. Our first two segments were courtesy of experts from the Life Planning Network and referencing their new book, Live Smart After 50, which is the website you can refer to. The first two segments were called Challenge, Change, and the Start of Life Planning. And then, of course, we just spoke about discover what works for you. We're going to shift gears now and talk about, again, a very rich segment of this book calling Anticipating Caregiving Challenges. So welcome to the show again, Andrea Gallagher and Bruce Frankel. Good morning.
Good morning, Zara.
Good morning.
Hello, Bryn. Bruce, let me give you a brief introduction. This is Andrea's second time on our show, in fact. It's always a pleasure to have a repeat guest. She's president of California-based Senior Concerns, which is a nonprofit that offers community services such as adult daycare, case management, and Meals on Wheels. Andrea held management positions with a variety of Fortune 500 companies before shifting to caregiving for seniors, a calling that became obvious while caring for her elderly next-door neighbors. She writes a bi-monthly newspaper column, The Other Side of 50, and also leads now currently the Life Planning Network, which is truly an expanding group of nationwide specialists. Six with us today, of course, helping people maximize the second phase of life and move forward mindfully into a positive aging phase of our lives. Bruce Frankel, he's a seasoned journalist with USA Today and People Magazine, New York Times bestselling author, as well as a poet. And this is year three, in fact, for Bruce's joining us monthly here on Circles of Change, often referencing his book, What Should I Do with the Rest of My Life? Bruce spotlights 12 inspiring stories of post-60 second-half successes, people really who refuse to let assumptions about aging, illness, and stereotypes stop them from realizing their dreams, truly of becoming among things an artist, athlete, activist, inventor, entrepreneur, dancer, even a teacher. The ultimate community, truly, who have created their paths by walking on it. So again, welcome, and we wanted to go into the whole subject, truly one of the ones we think about when it comes to aging or some part in that process of the second half of life, and that is caregiving and anticipating our own needs as well as those of others around us. So, Andrea, of course, this is your space professionally in terms of the organization you lead, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and I came to it by way of personal experience, but yes, Senior Concerns is a wonderful organization serving LA and Ventura County and helping caregivers. It's funny, our company name is focused, or our nonprofit name is focused on seniors, but indeed, the people we really help every day, more often, are caregivers.
Oh, the caregivers themselves, yeah. Well, Bruce, you all, in fact, in the book Live Smart After 50, of course, you provoke us there in the table of contents by how you name these chapters. And interestingly enough, the one about caregiving is entitled Without Delay. Why that choice?
Well, for one, the most important reason is because most of us avoid the issue until it is upon us. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, causes a great many problems that might be avoided or that we might help ourselves deal with if we didn't avoid them. And we begin Rosalind Carter has said, and she, as you know, former First Lady and also the head of the Rosalind Carter Institute for Caregiving. She once said there are only four kinds of people in the world: those who have been caregivers, those who are currently caregivers, those who will be caregivers, and those who will need caregivers. And, you know, that truth is undeniable. Mm. And we started the chapter with a story of a couple out in California that were healthcare professionals, named Teresa and Ed, and they'd been married for 43 years, and they were planning on their retirement. They had grandkids, and they were thinking of living comfortably and enjoying their life in the future, just a couple of years away when they would retire. And then Teresa, upon visiting their kids, their grandchildren, slipped on some steps and hit her head, and overnight, everything changed. And the sad thing was, of course, that other than having a will, they had very little else in place. They had no advance directives, no trust, no long-term insurance. And like most of us, they had never really asked themselves the what-if questions. Mm-hmm. And that left them in a very vulnerable position. And you see that over and over again when you listen to the histories of people who are caregiving. There are other reasons, of course, and we can talk about some of them. But it was that sense of, like, we really need to address this. And we need to address it as a society as well, because it's important.
Well, and it's always, I know, Bruce, you did a wonderful segment with us called on the conversationproject.org about what our end-of-life wishes are, and the whole idea of how we want to be cared is certainly a part of that. But, you know, Andrea, along that line, why is it, do you think, that we delay this discussion? Is it fear? Is it too complex? Is it, you know, it's for those older folks? I mean, why is that?
Yeah, I think it's really three things. I think, first of all, we don't think about it because before it happens, it's not in our nature. It's not something that we've experienced in a way. Certainly, we might have cared for our children, but actually caring for a friend or a sibling or a parent, it happens in a matter sometimes of seconds. Someone goes into the hospital, they have a stroke, it could be a number of things. So I think part of it is that it's just not a natural experience up until the point when it starts to happen for us. Mm-hmm. Second is most caregivers don't self-identify. So if you're a daughter that happens to be cooking meals for mom and dad on the weekend and bringing them to them, you don't think of yourself as a caregiver. You think of yourself as a daughter.
Good point.
If you're a spouse, you know, my mom cares for my dad, who's 10 years with Parkinson and is now wheelchair bound. She does not see herself as a wife. And so I think part of that, even if your parent is in an assisted living facility and you go over there, you know, to roll out the meds every evening, the chances, again, you're a daughter, you're a son, you're a friend, you're not necessarily a caregiver. So people don't self-identify. So that word is a difficult one for people to wrap their arms around sometimes. They see themselves as a different role rather than caregiver. But I think the most important one is that we're sort of wired to see ourselves as vital people,
yeah,
and not in need of help. And I often think when I, you know, you watch these America's Funniest Home videos and you see these kids rolling their skateboard down a railing.
Right.
And I look at that and I go, holy cow.
We know where this is going, yep.
Well, it's just, you know, a recipe for disaster or injury, right? I mean, why would anybody do that? Yet they're fearless. They don't see the danger. And because we see ourselves as vital, we don't see ourselves as either needing caregiving. We might see potentially the opportunity to give care, but I think that's part of it. We see ourselves as vital, and so it's not a natural role for us to be thinking about.
Well, I think the other one, of course, is for those of us that have elders that we know we want to help, though, it's tough to parent your parents.
Oh, yes.
Really, really tough. I mean, you had that opportunity. You're doing it for your parents now, but if you think about how you fell into your own career shift here, Andrea, through caring for neighbors that, you know, out of nowhere suddenly said, hey, could you go to the hospital with me? And before you know it, there you are.
Absolutely. And it was a matter of seconds. I mean, we took Fred to the hospital for Hildy because she couldn't drive, mm-hmm, and got there, and Fred went in for what was supposed to be day surgery, and the doctor came out 2 hours later and said Fred's kidneys had shut down and he was not doing well and was going to be in intensive care for at least 2 weeks. And then Hildy said, could you help me? Could you stay with me? She couldn't live alone at the time. And so it was laid in our lap. But it was an opportunity and a challenge that we embraced because my husband and I also have no kids. And Fred and Hildy had done some great planning, mm-hmm, but they hadn't thought about what was going to happen when one of them couldn't care for the other.
Yeah, that's right. We're speaking with Andrea Gallagher and Bruce Frankel. They're both members of the Life Planning Network, and the new book, Live Smart After 50, The Expert's Guide to Life Planning for Uncertain Times. And what a great resource. Each chapter focused with tools and templates and additional resources you can tap into. And obviously this word planning is pervasive. Bruce, talk a little bit about why it is really so important to plan for caregiving.
Well, I'll do that in 1 second. I just want to say that what Andrea said is so important, and she taught me something this week when she explained this a little further to me. I never thought of myself when my own father was dying of cancer a few years ago, I never thought of myself as a caregiver because I wasn't there. I was doing it long distance. I was calling doctors from work. I was worrying about my father and calling him. I was calling my mother and checking her. But I never gave myself the credit of actually being a caregiver. So I think it's really important to understand what Andrea is saying and to reflect on that a little.
Well, particularly as it will ripple into the other responsibilities you have in your life, and to learn then what you said earlier, Andrea, that we all have to reach out for help to sustain us, even if it's in all those other pockets of what we're up to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That term of interdependence.
So when we talk about planning, obviously we can't stop events from occurring by planning, but what we can do is by taking, you know, some first steps, doing honest appraisal to begin with about who we are and figuring out, just going through the steps, and there are worksheets in the book and resources in Live Smart After 50, in which you can begin to work through the what ifs, and you can figure out what documents you need to have in place, what choices you would like to make about how you want to live your life if you need caregiving, about where you want it, about who you want to be caretaking for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are conversations. And as we discussed when we discussed the Conversation Project, these are conversations that people often don't have. But if we begin having them sitting at our breakfast tables, we can begin to deal with them. They don't have to be laden with fear and dread, and we can begin to parse things out. And so, you know, the most important reason, of course, is that if we, you know, when these unplanned events occur and we have to substitute improvisation for planning,
mm-hmm.
then caregiving can wreak havoc on our lives. But if we have devised some plan, if we're comfortable with what we know we have to do, if we have our lists ready, we have a way in which we can help the person who needs care as well as help ourselves.
Andrea, you mentioned, of course, that your company's senior concerns, your involvement here with the Life Planning Network has been focused certainly on the seniors, but that you've realized this font of opportunity to help the caregivers. Could you describe the kind of things, you know, that would get people thinking about what would that look like? How do I care for myself as a caregiver?
Yeah, so one of the tipping points that we have at Senior Concerns is we do a lot of work with folks who their loved one has been diagnosed with dementia. And it is a perfect opportunity to start the work with the caregiver right then. So having them think about what would happen if this happened to you, how would you be taken care of, how would you be treated, who would you want to make decisions for you. And we also help them. We have pro bono legal and financial services. Excuse me. So quite often the individual themselves hasn't thought about you know, all of their end-of-life documents or even a long-term care plan for themselves. So mm-hmm. those are additional things that we do. But quite often, the most important thing we do is help caregivers self-identify their stress.
There you go, yeah.
Because it is, when you jump into the pool, you have no idea how deep it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you have no idea how long you're going to be swimming. And so it becomes, you know, it can be, you know, I don't know what you call it when it's a marathon and a swimming, but
that's right.
There
right.
you go.
As opposed to a sprint, yeah.
Exactly. And so that stress, you don't really recognize it's there. So, you know, sleep problems, folks think, well, okay, that's just because I'm overtired, or their forgetfulness, driving down the street even not knowing what they went down the street for, or being irritable, or tremendous family disagreements that occur, or feeling inadequate, or feeling guilty, feeling responsible. All of those things are, and we use support groups to do this. We use one-on-one conversations. We develop a care plan, but we do it for the caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
How can we provide you respite? How can we relieve your stress? And tremendously important, particularly in caring for a loved one with dementia.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, for our leaders who are listening in, I know, Bruce, you and I did a segment specifically where you introduced me to the word of presenteeism, meaning the number of employees who are remotely caring for their loved one and having to spend who knows how much time during work, sliding out, making phone calls, running here and there. And are they really capable then of fulfilling the opportunities of the business? But that you've mentioned there's hope here because there are a number of companies that are recognizing the opportunity, correct, to help.
Absolutely. There are a growing number, particularly large corporations, that are changing their policies and creating banking hours is now increasingly something that corporations are doing, so people can draw on their collected hours and don't have to fret that they are using up a few hours. They may have collected hours for sick leave or whatever, and also companies are recognizing that there is a benefit to their bottom line in helping people survive this period. It doesn't generally last. On average, people are caregivers for no more than 4 years. Yes, sometimes it can be decades, and sometimes it can be very, very short. But what companies are really recognizing, I think, is that they benefit too. And so, you know, one of the things that is changing is that people are finding it more and more possible to go to their HR departments and speak to their employers and say, I need to figure out a strategy here. I need to make my hours more flexible so that I can take care of things at home. Because if people are just going into work and then spending all their time on the phone dealing from work with doctors or
sure,
appointments
exactly.
or having to run, it's a problem.
Absolutely. You know, Andrew, in fact, could you maybe talk about some of the statistics in this whole area? Because on one hand, you read about the costs, but there are other statistics to really bear in mind to really focus in on here.
Yeah, and I just wanted to piggyback on Bruce's point for a minute. Amgen, a big biotech company in our backyard here, they do two wonderful things for family caregivers. One is they have a free number of hours that each employee can use with a geriatric care manager. So even if you are remote, you can find a geriatric care manager. For instance, my parents live in New England, and I'm here in California. If I worked for Amgen, I would have a number of hours to be able to work with a New England-based geriatric care manager to help to create a care plan for my parents. In addition to that, we're just starting to go into local employers with a care fair.
Ah, yeah.
So think of it like a health fair, yep. but it's a care fair. And every booth is all dedicated to how we can support you. So anyway, and the reason why is because 44 million yeah. Americans are caregivers.
Wow.
That's one in five people. And, you know, I don't think any of us can go to a cocktail party or even later on today have to go to a baby shower. And
yep.
I can imagine we're all going to be having conversations about caring for a loved one. And
I believe in one of the statistics, yeah. too, yeah, maybe you were going to say it, is that over 50% or that's right at the split point, men and women. So that isn't
yes.
gender specific.
Not at all. Not at all. And frankly, it isn't just caring for an aging parent. I believe 17% of us will be caring for an aging sibling. Those of us will be caring for our spouse. So there are a tremendous amount of, even at Senior Concerns, we have an adult day program for folks with stroke, dementia. But we have a lot of developmentally disabled people that are now adults who the mom of that person is 90
That's
years
right.
old,
right.
can no longer care for the individual. So caregiving comes in all shapes and sizes.
And I would offer as well for some of our listeners to recognize that this is a field from a career standpoint, whether you be entering into college or thinking about reinventing yourself or leveraging your counseling skills in new ways. Talk about a wide opportunity for even more of us that can have fallen in the space of having gone from caregivers to now being the cared for. Bruce,
Absolutely.
You know, you've watched a lot of that movement, haven't you, Bruce?
That's really true, Zara. In fact, yesterday I met a woman. I unfortunately couldn't remember right this moment what the name of her company is, but she has a company in New England that is particularly recruiting elders to to do caregiving, because mm-hmm. what they have found is that people who reach a certain point in life have already given care, so they understand and they have compassion, and they turn out to be really some of the best caregivers. They're present, they're thoughtful, they're constructive, they're proactive as caregivers. And so it's one of those things, too, where the marketplace has a great need, but it is also realizing that its best employees may be the very people that it's avoided up until now.
Ah, yeah, that's right, because of age discrimination, or you didn't get a certificate in XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I think the other thing you would tell us is that the vitality of crossing the generations in this field is so important. I mean, the things that our younger professionals can learn by being part of this that they can carry forward then into other business venues or not-for-profit work is vital. Andrea, your thoughts with that?
I think that absolutely. There's an opportunity for us to learn intergenerationally, and I often say that the way baby boomers today are treating their parents and caring for them, mm-hmm. They're becoming role models for their own children. So I often think of the baby boomers' children and what that's going to be like mm-hmm. when they're caring for us down the road. So and it's spawning all sorts of new caregiving opportunities, from online opportunities to support groups and counseling, and you know, as you said, just a tremendous growth area, and will continue to be for the next 20 years.
That's right. We've had the pleasure here. This is our third of four segments with the authors and collaborators for the book Live Smart After 50, which you can get on livesmartafter50.com, as well as through the network of experts all across the nation, coast to coast, shore to shore, at thelifeplanningnetwork.org. And Andrea Gallagher, who's leading the Life Planning Network at this point in time, you know, what an experience for you to see this movement, you know, continuing to span out, Andrea, isn't it?
It's tremendously exciting, because it's been a personal passion, and it actually has been only since I cared for Fred and Hildy.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I saw, you know, this 83-year-old couple that had led a pretty lovely life, had done a great job of planning for their future, but forgot a few key elements, and how those few key elements at the end really wreaked havoc on their life. And if it wasn't for my husband and I, who knows what, you know, things might have befallen them. So, and the challenge is that we have 78 million baby boomers who have the opportunity, we have the runway, we have the path to be able to think about our future in a more proactive way, so that we can achieve all of our possibilities and prepare for the probabilities. So it's an exciting, exciting time.
So Bruce, 78 million copies of Live Smart After 50. I think that sounds like a great market opportunity for you all.
Let's go for it.
Yeah, that's right. Let's go for it. Well, Andrea Gallagher and Bruce Frankel, thanks so much again for contributing to our segment. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.